Connection Show. Uh-huh. And it's here to help you grow. Here we go.
Come on.
Here we go.
Come
it's
on.
The Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show.
Uh-huh.
It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go.
Here's an inspirational word from Dr. David Miller before the show begins.
I have a word for you today. There's someone out there on the threshold of greatness, but it seems like fear is holding you back. Remember, it is better to attempt to do something great and fail than do nothing and succeed at doing nothing. So let's break the fear barrier and go for it today.
It's a big connection.
We have in the studio with us this morning Mr. Nicholas Wharton, and he is the interim executive director for Charlotte Area Fund. Well, we're glad to have you because we're looking forward to a great connection today with you, because we've already talked a little bit before the show started. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the program. I know the Charlotte Area Fund has been around forever, almost 50 years or
yes,
so.
Yes, right. That's correct.
But, you know, it's amazing how something can be in a community and people in the community know of it.
That's
but
right.
don't really know what it does.
That's true.
And so we wanted to have you on the show because you guys do a lot of great work in the community, and you make a tremendous impact on people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought we'd have you on Faith Connection in order to make that connection in the community in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for asking. It's nice to be here. Well, let me start. I'm originally a native New Yorker.
Okay.
I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, Queens, product of public schools, product of many of the opportunities that the Charlotte Area Fund is actually providing its clients today.
Mm.
My mother's family is from Greensboro, North Carolina, all
There's
Aggies.
A connection.
Oh, huge connection. And so it's really nice to be. I've been in Charlotte since 2003. My background, quite frankly, is really in organizational development, diversity, inclusion. I've worked at a number of universities in the corporate space as well, leading diversity and inclusion initiatives. Probably worked in almost every educational setting from K through 12 to colleges and universities to private schools, all trying to really create access and equity, really, and fairness in organizations, quite frankly.
Mm. Okay. Sounds like you've got a real diverse background. Mm. So this is nothing new to you, what you're doing right now.
Quite frankly, it really isn't. Because when you think about the history of the Charlotte Area Fund, it really is an initiative that is born out of the war on poverty. Lyndon Johnson, all of us remember the great war on poverty, the sort of great society he was trying to address relative to reducing poverty, right, in the nation, really. And the Economic Opportunity Act, which was an executive order in 1963, really was the cornerstone of creating community action agencies, which the Charlotte Area Fund is one.
Mm-hmm.
And so currently, the Charlotte Area Fund is one of 1,000 community action agencies in 95% of the counties across the country, both urban and rural, all dedicated to reducing poverty, both at the individual level as well as at the systemic level. And so this initiative has been in Charlotte for 54 years. In fact, Charlotte has a unique sort of a reality that it started its community action agency 1 year prior to the legislation. And so it is sort of ironic today that, you know, Charlotte finds itself 50 out of 50, you know, major cities in the country for the being the least favorable city for poor people. And so Charlotte Area Fund is the only federally mandated anti-poverty program in the city, in the county, quite frankly.
My goodness. Now, how many other agencies like this agency do we have in North Carolina? Because we have 100 counties in North Carolina.
Correct.
And I just wondered how many.
Certainly. Great questions. Great questions. It's about 40.
Okay.
There's roughly 40 community action agencies, all doing various programs. In the rural environments, you find weatherization initiatives going going on, right?
Right.
Home repair, number of emergency assistance programs, right? Our Charlotte Area Fund focuses on, there is some emergency assistance, but we really are focusing on workforce development, trying to provide training in high demand careers. Mm-hmm. Most recently, we just incorporated a heating and ventilation air conditioning training program, where our clients will receive national certification in environmental protection, EPA certification in heating and refrigeration. Those jobs pay anywhere from $15 to $20 an hour, right? So it's a three-month training program, right? So we also will fund for those who are at the 125% federal poverty level, right? And that's the sort of scale based on family income. We will provide free training for those individuals. Right. We'll also provide not only will help them in training, but we'll also provide child care while they're in training. We provide a whole range of wraparound services, right, to support individuals as they try to progress in life and move up the socioeconomic scale.
Great. Now, let me ask you, does this training actually take place at your center, or do you have a specific center where you do this? And do you partner with institutions like Central Piedmont?
Or sure.
How do you provide these training programs?
Excellent So some training goes on at our facility at 901 North Tryon in terms of we have like work readiness class that we have. But a lot of our training actually is really sort of purchased through vendors. And Central Piedmont is obviously, community colleges. I'm also a trustee emeritus of a State University of New York community college campus. And I realize community colleges are important engines for training. And so we partner with Central Piedmont. Mm-hmm. A number of our clients come in, they say they want to go through CDL training, want to be track the trailer, heavy equipment training. And so we'll partner with vendors that have strong reputations for important outcomes for not only training folk, but also placing them in jobs. So Central Piedmont, as you know, is a huge economic and educational engine, not only in the region, but throughout the country. So we do partner with Central Piedmont.
And then you mentioned something about purchase services. So you pay the tuition?
Yes, correct.
Is that what takes
place? Correct. That's correct.
If you find a candidate that wants to get into this particular program and you partner with Central Piedmont on it, then you actually take care of the tuition.
We very well can. And also provide child care. We try to do what we can to ensure the individual completes, their designated plan, right, that they work to create with a case manager in the office.
Okay. Now, you mentioned child care. So if you had, say, for instance, a single mom and she's trying to create a new career for herself and you guys would provide some daycare services so that she would have somewhere to place the child while she's actually in training?
That's the idea.
A little bit more about how that works because I think that's important. Because there are a lot of single moms out here that find it very difficult to provide a good living for themselves and their children. We had Helping Hands on our show, haven't been long ago, and they actually have a program similar. Mm-hmm. See, I'd like to know how your program works, because sometimes collaboration is the key to success. So tell me a little bit about how that piece works for the single mother.
Sure. So in theory, we think of ourselves as trying to connect and collaborate and coordinate, the efforts, right, in folks' lives. And you raised such a good question around single moms, because my experience has been with workforce development and women and single women is that they attack training in ways that sometimes men don't, because they realize as being head of the household, failure is not an option. Mm-hmm. So they're hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. So we come at it with that in mind, number one. Number two, what we would do is intake process. They'll sit down with our caseworker. We'll understand not only their aspirations around jobs, but we look at them in a more comprehensive case management way. So we'll look at their child care needs. We'll look at their housing needs. We'd look at various elements. And not only that, we'll look at the whole family. Mm-hmm. And what does the family need? Not just the mom. What does the whole family need? And we'll begin to have real intense conversations about how we can refer out, how we can provide support systems, right? Mm-hmm. So that's important for anyone thinking and listening to this conversation who might be interested, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking at the whole person. And as they come through our program, as we line up the kind of training they want, we talk about their child care needs, and we'll help find a vendor, child care, that will support them. Mm-hmm. And so that's really kind of how it happens for the most part, right? But it's very important that the only core eligibility is, number one, economic eligibility. But we really want individuals who are motivated.
Right.
Right? That's mission critical.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's really how it works. It's not terribly complicated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you go about selecting individuals who would go through your program?
Right.
Is there a referral program?
Yes.
Or is there, do you have other agencies that feed clients to you?
Yeah.
Give
you an
example. Explain a little bit about that.
It's very unique, but I think in terms of referrals are really key. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier the notion of collaboration. Collaboration mm-hmm. is absolutely critical to how all this works. We're one of many social sector agencies that's a part of an ecosystem, if you will, right? There's mm-hmm. Crisis Ministry, there's Salvation Army, there's the Urban League, there's all these initiatives, right? And mm-hmm. ideas that we work collaboratively, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we accept referrals from those agencies. I'll give you an example. We have a very creative initiative called the Duke Energy Refrigeration, a replacement initiative. Duke Energy has provided resources for those in a 200% economic mobile or financial status to have their refrigerators replaced that are worn. And they've come to us, right, as individuals who will help lead that effort. So we'll go out, we'll work with Crisis Ministry. Some of you may have heard that recently Crisis Ministry had a problem with distributing air conditioners. You may have heard mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. So we decided to partner with Crisis Ministry. So they have a distribution network of individuals who need air conditioners. Their distribution network is much broader than ours. We partnered with them to be able to broaden and provide air conditioners and refrigerators. So that's one of the creative partnerships that we have. And this is all for folk who are poor, right, who mm-hmm. need these appliances, which are energy vampires in their homes, right,
mm-hmm.
that cost a great deal of money. So
right.
we're saving them money. We also help them budget it. And as we connect with those clients, we learn more about them and their various needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to be creative about how we, connect with clients.
Okay. Now, getting the word out is the key,
It is.
Because basically, I have this saying that says a man can starve to death in the middle of a grocery store because it's not how much groceries he has around him, but it's what he gets on the inside of him that sustains him.
Well, can I use that?
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
If you want to use it, you're welcome to use it. But, and you find out there are a lot of people in communities that are mm-hmm. going through a mm-hmm. Bad place in life,
right.
just don't know where to go.
Right.
And they are sitting right in the middle of all of these resources, but just don't know where to turn or where to go to. But before we talk about that, I want to take a break here and listen to a great song by Tasha Cobbs. It's called Great God.
God, great God, oh.
We're back with Nicholas Wharton, who is the interim executive director for the Charlotte Area Fund. We're having a great conversation with him because it's just exciting, the stuff that they're doing. You know, Nick, I wanted to ask you a question because there's a tremendous problem in Charlotte with housing. Mm-hmm. And we're moving into the winter months.
Right.
And it's going to become more difficult for people to find shelter during this winter. And I hope the winter isn't as impactive as the storm season has been. But tell me a little bit about what programs you guys offer for that, or what assistance you offer through other partners that might be interesting to people.
Right. Well, it is not uncommon, you know, certainly during the winter months, that we will have clients that are impacted for a variety of reasons and find their way to us and needing housing. And so we have either outsourced or asked some of our sister agencies to help, or we've at times provided temporary housing, provided resources for temporary housing. It's not necessarily the business we're in, but we have helped. We have helped, and we also provide referrals. But the reality is, it is difficult for working families to have affordable housing in Charlotte. We know that. Mm-hmm. It is difficult, and I understand there are lots of movements afoot. I actually belong to a group called the Champions, a group of diverse men who meet once a month. Humor Calls are part of it, and other influential, diverse men. And there are lots of very creative strategies, I understand, that are at play. And at another time, we'll come back and talk about that.
Okay.
But there are some exciting things on the horizon. Charlotte Air Fund specifically doesn't necessarily provide housing per se.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to ask that question. Now, talk to me a little bit about poverty. I mean, the attitude, for lack of a better word, about poverty. Many people feel that these are just people who don't have a desire to work or don't have a desire to get ahead.
Right.
I personally don't believe that. I think that people can get down on their luck and bad things happen to good people.
That's right.
Tell me what you run into with that. Yeah. I mean, how does that fit into what you...
Well, it's very personal for me. I mean, here I'm sitting in this wonderful studio talking to you about poverty, but I'm a product of poverty. You know, I grew up in New York City. My mother was on food stamps, you know, so I know what it's like to get government cheese, you know. But the reality is that all throughout my life, I've had individuals and systems, supportive systems, right, that have helped me progress in life, whether it's the Upward Bound Talent Search program that started actually out of the Economic Opportunity Act in 1964, or the Educational Opportunity Program that gave me a chance to go to college, which I became the director of at two universities in New York, right? Both of those initiatives, all trying to provide those who have who financially disadvantaged opportunities. Then, of course, in the corporate space, helping to drive diversity initiatives that also come out of a sort of a spirit of helping those, you know, who may not have had a shot get a shot, right? So I realized that no one makes it on their own. Everybody needs somebody in order to make it. We are in an interdependent society, right? We learned that, if we didn't know that, we learned that with the recent riots here in Charlotte.
Yes.
Right? That we are all kind of connected together. But we've got to do better here in Charlotte. We're an environment of great wealth and resources. I also had a chance to be the first diversity officer at Charlotte Latin School.
Okay.
Right. So having worked there, right, in the presence of great wealth. And so I have a very interesting perspective from an Urban League perspective, from a Charlotte Latin perspective, that gives a great sort of visual on Charlotte, the have and the have nots. And so the distinguishing element about both is that it's opportunity. You know, when preparation, you know, meets opportunity, you have success. So there's a level of respect, right, that we ought to show people who are down on their luck. Last point about this. A gentleman, Deputy Speaker Arthur Eve, who started Access and Equity Programs in New York. He was a state legislator. He was one of my mentors. His thought was this. You know, what we do, you know, for ourselves on a daily basis with our education, the homes we're able to buy, the cars we're able to drive and so forth, are really sort of God's gift in a sense to us, right? But what we do for those who are at the twilight of their years, the elderly who can't make it, that need prescription drugs, that are making decisions around whether they're going to eat, you know, or get medication.
Right.
Or those who are at the youngest of their age, who are, you know, who don't have Head Start services, who get poor education, our young people, right? Mm-hmm. The things we do for them is really our gift to God.
Right.
And so we have to understand that we're all kind of in this sort of symbiotic relationship. And that's not always the case. But what brings it together is proximity. The closer you get to a situation, the better you see it. Mm-hmm. You can't see it behind gated fences. It just doesn't work that way. You have to get close to it. And once you get close to it, as you and I have, right, mm-hmm. you see it with a very different lens, right? And you're almost encouraged to act, right?
Absolutely.
So that's the business we're in, and we embrace it. You know, mm-hmm. This work is not for the faint at heart.
It really is.
We can't be afraid of our people, our young people whose mm-hmm. pants are sagging, you know, mm-hmm. who are, you know, having troubles, who may have some mental conditions or have some issues, right? Mm-hmm. We can't be afraid of them.
No, that's
right?
true.
We can't be afraid. This is courageous work.
Well, interaction is almost imperative in a situation like this.
It is.
You know, with the great surge in growth mm-hmm. in Mecklenburg County, because mm-hmm. we have people coming from everywhere,
yes.
Converging on Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it kind of reminds you of the growth of Atlanta years ago.
Very true.
Have you found that with this new growth, mm-hmm. has there been a greater demand placed on your services with this increased growth?
Well, so a couple things have happened. You know, since the recession, right, I think that was probably the biggest sort of surge. You had, working class folk, first into, pretty good jobs, but that recession hit, communities in an inequitable way. Mm-hmm. So for African-American wealth, for instance, a lot of wealth was lost over that period that's not coming back nationally, right? Mm-hmm. And so we still are struggling, right, mm-hmm. with the effects of the recession.
Kind of reeling.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But within the poor communities, and we always say this thing, the rich get a cold and poor get like pneumonia, right? So the reality is that for poor people, they've gotten poor. And, uh-huh. and so the wealth gap has gotten so great, mm-hmm. right? And people clearly are in ways being impacted. The social network is being undermined. We hear this in federal policy. We hear it in state policy. New policies around HUD mm-hmm. are talking about, extra guidelines to provide housing for poor people,
Right.
So all of those things are a cumulative impact. So yes, we're seeing more poverty, but at the same time, right, we're seeing great opportunities as well.
Right.
And that's the key. How do we connect, invest in individuals and connect them to opportunities?
Right.
So we're in a very precarious situation right now.
That's great. Two last things. Mm-hmm. First, I wanted to ask you, because, what you do is so interesting. And I know many times, when you're trying to do good, you can't get enough hands to do it with.
Right.
So do you guys accept volunteers to work
Absolutely.
With you?
Absolutely. We always looking for volunteers.
And how would one apply? Because
sure.
I'm sure there's some people out there that are looking for an opportunity mm-hmm. to work in the community. How would they apply to be a volunteer with the
sure.
Charlotte Area Fund?
Right. I will go to our website, mm-hmm. www.charlotteareafund.org.
Okay.
And there's opportunities to go and learn about the organization. But also there's a phone number. You can call us at 704-372-3010. And you can talk with our people, and they will connect you to where your resources, your talents can be best utilized.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it has been great having you on the show, and, I wish we could go longer because it's just interesting, and, this is our first time meeting, but it's just interesting what you do. Your passion is unbelievable, and I think that's what's required when you're trying to do work like this, is you mm-hmm. got to have a passion for what you do. Well, are there any final words that you'd like to have anything yeah. you'd like to tell our listening mm-hmm. audience about Charlotte Area Fund? Mm-hmm. And I guess I need to ask this question.
Sure.
You're interim now.
Yes.
I'm thinking, mm-hmm. are we looking at the new yeah. executive director is that a possibility?
Well, listen, anything is possible. Right?
All right.
A great person once told me, one of my mentors, and she said, Nick, you have to understand in life, positions are not possessions.
My goodness.
Right?
Okay.
It is your service, mm-hmm. right? That's most important, right? Is your service to others. Right?
I got to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to use that like you told me.
All right.
On the statement. Okay. Well, last words.
Well, listen, I thank you so much for this opportunity, number one. I'm humbled by it. And thank you so much. We need to get the word out on the Charlotte Area Fund. We're open for business. And we're trying to take a very storied organization, right, with an incredible history, right, that's tied into the most important era in American history, the war on poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we've forgotten it. We've forgotten historical context. Right?
Right.
To real important community action. And so we're trying to revive this agency in a way that really makes a difference. And so we're excited about our work. Our staff are excited about the work. And we want to involve others.
Now, last thing. Can people donate?
Can people donate?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a profound question. Not only can they donate. Right? They can give money.
They can give money.
How's
okay.
that?
That's even better.
That's right. They,
that's
no, but I real, that, that's a great question. Yes, we can. They can donate their talent, you know, their time, you know,
mm-hmm.
and their treasures.
Okay.
We are really looking for resources. One of the things that has been a challenge for us is that our operating expenses are so very, very, very tight, and we're not able really to reach the kind of outcomes that we want. Now, the good news is this. So over the next several months, it's been communicated to us that we will be receiving a significant allocation of resources, probably close to the area of about close to $1 million, right?
Okay.
Those resources are really to be leveraged in the community with agencies, right, that also want to bring their resources together to expand what they do.
Okay.
So we provide direct service to clients, but we also will be in a position to help partner, right, with evidence-based, outcomes-driven agencies, right,
okay.
that are proven
right.
to work effectively with poor people,
right.
particularly at 125%, and we will help leverage the things they do.
Okay.
So that's an exciting opportunity for us coming forward.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question.
Yeah, I am too.
All right. It's been great having you with us today. We've been chatting today and making the connection with Nicholas Wharton, who is the interim executive director of Charlotte Area Fund, a 50-year-old organization that is still churning out great results in the Charlotte area. All right. Thank you very much. And
thank you so much.
Great
it's
to
a pleasure
have you.
Being here.
It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Come on.
Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Come
it's
on.
The Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. And it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show. And it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Come on.
Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Come on.
It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration. Revelation, it's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here's the inspirational word from Dr. David Miller before the show begins.
Our word of the day today is for someone out there who's trying to make a difference in the world but seem like you are constantly being discouraged. Just remember, there are two types of people who will tell you that you cannot make a difference in this world. Those who are afraid to try themselves, and those who are afraid if you try, you will succeed. So just keep on pressing, because your time is coming to make a difference in this world.
It's the Faith Connection.
Today we have with us in the studio Sandra Chisholm, who is the founder of Gracious Hands Traditional Housing. And we're glad to have you with us today, Sandra. We're looking forward to a great interview and making a fantastic community connection today. Sandra, tell us a little bit about yourself. I think you founded this company about 3 years ago, and you assist the homeless. And I think that's a fantastic thing to have somebody in the community working with homeless people. But now your organization works primarily with children and women. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the organization itself.
Well, Gracious Hands is a transitional house for
homeless women with their children, women that have been in domestic violence, women that have been had substance abuse problems, or women that just, you know, were working but not making enough money to be able to sustain. I provide them with several different programs. We give them basic life skills. We give them coaching. We give them on-site counseling, budget and finance, credit repair. We have a program called Pushing Through the Pain, where we just help them to push through the pain that they've endured during this season, during this time that they're in.
Fantastic. So it's more than just housing. You provide them with skills as well, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, are there other organizations that support your organization that helps you provide these services?
Yes. I partners with Rest Care. Well, I have a lady that works at Rest Care that works really closely with the women that are there. Partners with Vision Beyond the Eyes, which will help them get jobs when needed. For the most part, it's just those three and Gracious Hands that pull it together to make it work for the community.
Fantastic. Now, tell me a little bit about that. Now, you're the founder and director, but tell me a little bit about what really motivated you to start such a needed organization, because certainly I have a passion for single parents with children, and especially women, because it's a very difficult thing. And we just did a show on abuse, and I learned so much from that. And I think this is, since your organization handles both, take women in that are abused, and as well as women who are just homeless for no real reason or apparent reason, except for the fact economically they just cannot afford to shelter themselves. Right. But tell me, what motivated you to start this organization?
Well, myself. I was a mother of three, single mother of three. By the age of 21, I had three children.
My goodness.
I just decided that, you know, I didn't want to, you know, be like everyone. I'm not going to say everyone else. I knew that my children deserved more. My children didn't ask to be here. Mm-hmm. So I decided that food stamps, welfare just wasn't going to be the road for me, that my children deserved a little bit better. So I just worked hard. I worked really, really hard for me and my children. I didn't get to go to college, but I vowed that my children would, and they did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, when I hit the lottery, when I hit the lottery one day, you know, I'm going to open up a homeless shelter, is what I said. That's what I was telling myself. And one day God told me, he said, no, when I gave you the vision, that was the lottery. Now I need for you to move.
And God is the lottery.
Then he's the lottery.
That's great. And after you started it, I mean, and you've been in existence now for about 3 years, but how many people do you serve?
Well, in the 3 years that I've been in the community, I've served 108 women and 111 children.
My goodness.
Transitioning out 47 into their very own, saving $5,000 when they leave the program.
My God. Okay. So in other words, you have a savings program for them. So you help them build their own finances so they will have some kind of war chest when they step out into the real world.
Exactly.
Huh? Okay. Now, how do you accomplish that?
Well, we do budget and finance, mm-hmm. And credit repair, because most of them need their credit repaired. And right. Believe it or not, a lot of people don't know how to save. Mm-hmm. So that's as one of the requirements for them to be in the program. They have to agree to save 50% of their income.
Okay. Now, so evidently, the women you take in do have some income, but it's not enough to do what they need to do
to provide for themselves. Some do, mm-hmm. And some don't have a job at all. But those that don't have any employment at all, when they get there, I have them working within 2 weeks. I'm partners with a staffing agency, and we get them working and within 2 weeks. Those that do have a job that don't make enough money to sustain, what we do is find jobs to make so they can make more money. So say they come in at making minimum wage, we at least find them a job making $11 or $12 an hour.
Great. I mean, now, so academically, are these women prepared, or some do they have, you know, what's the norm that you
academically
find?
Most of them have our high school mm-hmm. graduates.
Right.
So when I found out, okay, we have a high school diploma, would you like to go back to school? Mm-hmm. And if so, what would you like to go back to school for? I just had two that just graduated and got their CNA certificates. One was making $14 an hour. The other is making $15 an hour. And I got someone reached out to me just Saturday, as a matter of fact, and offered a job making $22.50 an hour for a CNA.
My gracious.
Yes, so I'm very excited about it, and she's very excited.
Well, you have a right to be excited, because basically you are restoring lives, and I think that's an important part, because, you know, the community has to have people like yourself and like your organization that are motivated to do what they do. And, you know, when you love what you're doing,
yes,
it's not hard to do it. You know, now, tell me a little bit about, is there a lot of drama with the families you take in, or really, you know, tell me about how you screen the clients and exactly what type clients you're taking, because sounds like they're already pre-motivated when they get to you.
And that's what I look for when I do my assessments.
Okay.
I make sure that they're motivated. I truly believe that we have enough of the rapid rehousing and the rapid, you know, constantly helping those that really don't want the help. So I tell them, I say, hey, it's a lot of work to transition yourself. So you have to be ready to roll up your sleeves and do what you have to do to make your life better, because it's not just going to fall from the sky. So when I'm doing the assessments, I make sure that they are really, really eager about changing their lives and getting back on the right track. As far as drama in the house, people, surprisingly, a house full of women and a house full of children, it is not that way. I always tell them it takes a village to raise a child. And you all are in here together. And you need each other, regardless if you know that or not. And they really gravitate. They cook dinner for each other. They may help each other, watch each other's children while one is doing something or the other. So they become family. When they come into that house, when they leave, they're a family.
It sounds like to me that in order for you to have put this together in 3 years, and you say you were motivated because you were in the same circumstance at one time, you know, what I think our listeners would love to hear is how you motivated yourself and how you stepped in. I know you're married now and you three kids and your kids are going to college and all of that. But, you know, a lot of times when people are in circumstances, you've explained to us, you find out that they lose their motivation because life has pushed them down, so until they much more prefer down than the resistance of trying to climb up. So tell me a little bit about what motivated you to get out of the circumstance and then start pulling others up the same way.
Well, like I always tell my children now, which are 34, 30, and 29, my children have always been my motivation.
Okay.
Even when I didn't feel like I wanted to do something, all I could think of was my children. And I would call them by their nicknames, Man Boo Boo and Shanika. Even though somebody made me mad at work, Man Boo Boo and Shanika. That's what kept me driven.
Mm-hmm.
It pushed me harder. This is not about you, Sandra. This is about your children. You got to do what you have to do for the children. So that's what I teach these women. Miss Sandra, I don't want. It's not about what you want. These babies didn't ask to be here. Mm-hmm. It's your responsibility. You have to step up and you have to do it. So that's what motivates me. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I give back to these women. And now they get it. Mm-hmm. Once they get around me a little bit, they get it. They get it.
And that's a great way to look at it, too, because, you know, you're absolutely correct. The kids should not be punished because of the, I would say, the sins of the parent.
That's right.
And I don't really mean that as, you know, as
right,
that.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that a lot of times you find that when people are not motivated because they've gone through so much tragedy and so many problems in their own personal lives, they fail to motivate their children. Mm-hmm. And I noticed in you telling me about your kids, you made every one of them go to college. And that is fantastic because, for a single parent, that's quite an accomplishment within itself. Okay, Sonia, it's time for us to make a soul connection. And I think this song really fits the great work you're doing and the people you're serving. It's called A Great Work by Brian Courtney Wilson.
Sometimes there are obstacles in the road that can leave you feeling low, and you don't know how to move forward. And sometimes there are turns you want to take, but the way gets hard to trace. Now you're wondering, how did you get here? But don't you give up until you see how God is ordering your steps so you can walk into your seas. He that has begun a great work in you is faithful to perform. God is faithful to perform it. He that has begun a great work in you is faithful to perform it. Our God is faithful. To bless the world as it flows.
He that has begun
a great work,
in you
is faithful to perform
it.
God is faithful to perform. Oh, he that has begun a great work in you is faithful to perform it. God is faithful to perform it. So if you ever get discouraged, speak to yourself and say, God is doing a great work. He's doing a great work. He's doing a great work in me. God is doing a great work. He's doing a great work. He's doing a great work in me. God is doing a great work. God is doing great work. God is doing a great work. He's doing a great work. Doing a great work. To perform, God is faithful to perform. You ought to encourage somebody. Show your name.
He's faithful to perform.
God is faithful to perform. Yesterday, today, and forevermore. God is faithful.
Faithful
and great. Great is his faithfulness. Great is his faithfulness. So what should be considered as we proceed is that this work did not begin with you. Our mother's mothers and father's fathers planted seeds when we were but the faint notion of a dream in their mind. They hoped for a harvest, a legacy, a great work. So may your next step forward help us to connect the dots and see this picture.
Discouraged. and see greatness exceeding abundantly, more than we can imagine. But let me assure you that it's great, and our God is faith. Yes, Lord. Yes, you're great. Yes, Lord.
We're back now with Sonja Chisholm, the founder of Gracious Hands Traditional Housing. Tell me a little bit about how do you, I mean, this is a lot, but how do you fund this?
Jesus, honestly, private donors, uh-huh. Husband and I, fundraisers, mm-hmm. Do a lot of fundraisers.
Okay. You've got to do a lot of fundraisers.
Yeah, we just had one this past Saturday. It was awesome.
That's, really?
Yes. We had an all-white fundraiser at the Johnson Mansion, okay. And the goal was to raise $40,000. Uh-huh. We hit 21, so we're okay. Still a little short, but God's going to provide. He always does.
Well, that's not a, I mean, 21 is not a bad.
Oh, no.
Not a bad raise. Tell me, now, do you have, do you write grants any? Or
I just, probably about 3 months ago, finally got a decent grant writer.
Okay.
That is willing and eager about the organization. So who is dedicating their time to finding the proper grants for Gracious Hands.
Okay, so they have a passion for what
they have a
doing.
Passion for what
okay.
I do.
Okay. Now, how large is the house that you're working? Now, do all the women stay at the house?
Yes.
So you work with so many women at a time?
At a time. Yes.
Okay. How many clients can you take at a time?
It depending on the number of children that the clients have.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I can decide how many I take. Mm-hmm. This group of ladies that I have right now had six. I have one. I'm down to five because one transitioned out 2 weeks ago. Okay. She saved $2,200, but she still did well.
Mm-hmm.
So no more than six, no less than five.
Okay.
Okay.
When you take these women in, how long do they stay with you?
Depending on where they are when they get to me.
Okay.
They can be in the program for an entire year. And
okay.
And I have some that I, when they come through the door, you need the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
However, it may be some that, like I said, come in that are working, just need to find better jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we work really fast to get them better jobs, make sure they save some money. If they have anything on their credit, get their credit cleared up so that they can move forward. Right. So I've had them to stay as long as, I mean, maybe 2 months. And up to 10 months.
Okay.
Haven't had anyone that have had to stay a year.
Okay. Now, with the present housing situation in Charlotte, what kind of housing do you transition them into?
Well, a lot of them being when they get their credit up and they get their money together, and mm-hmm. some they get their own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of them have already been on waiting lists for apartments. So it's just a matter of, hey, I needed to make more money so that I can get in this apartment when this apartment come available.
Right.
So that was the thing. Now, here within the last 7 months mm-hmm. or so, since it's really bad out, we're not having a lot of luck.
And getting proper, housing
right,
for them.
Right, right.
Okay. And in that situation, do you have some organizations that are working with you to help you find the proper housing for them?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I know it's difficult right now, and that's one
it
of
is.
The major things. What about the children? You got kids in the house that got to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone that's tutoring these kids to help them with their grades, or do you have a program like that? Or
well, we do have people that volunteer. I have students from Johnson C. Smith that will mm-hmm. come in. We always have someone from the church that wants to come in that does tutoring.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, with the last four or five sets of families that I've had, they've had really young children, so we haven't had to have tutoring. But when we do, it's just a phone call away to get someone in to tutor them if they need so.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was the next question I was going to ask you. You know, is there a minimum age with children? Because sometimes you can have small babies.
Mm-hmm.
Do your organization supply the needs for those kids?
Yes.
The Pampers? And
yes.
Really?
Yes. So my program is basically set up to where it's at. I'm partners with Sack and Harvest Food Bank.
Okay.
Okay. So I want the women to save as much money as possible.
Okay.
as much money as possible. So I try to make sure they don't have to buy Pampers,
mm-hmm.
milk,
mm-hmm.
anything that they need to take care of them, laundry detergent, soap, tissue. I don't want them to have to worry about buying those things at all. And I want that's because I want them to save as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. However, I do make them make once they get on their feet a little bit, they do make a $50 donation back towards Gracious Hands. Okay. That puts it all back in. Mm-hmm. Back in the house so that they can have everything that they need.
Okay.
But the reason that I do this, and I wasn't even charging them that. I wasn't even doing that at first. And then I had a city council tell me, I won't even look at you if you don't make them do something. How are you making them be responsible or paying anything?
Mm-hmm.
I was mad, but when she said it, it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And but I just want them to be, because I used to say, oh, man, if I could just go somewhere and save a month's worth of checks,
mm-hmm.
how that would really get me on my feet. And that's what I want for these women. And I promise you, it works. It works. I have a 47-year-old that told me the other day, I think she saved like $1,375. And she told me, she said, I've never saved this much money in my life, Miss Sandra.
Well, now, there's got to be ups and downs. There's ups and downs in everything.
Everything. That's
and
true.
Usually when anybody comes on the show and they've got a program like your program, the first thing I do is say, okay, tell me some of the ups and downs that you deal with in your program.
The ups and downs is when you see someone with so much potential,
mm-hmm.
and it's almost though as though I'm more invested in them than they are in themselves, and that's a problem.
Okay.
That's a problem.
Now, in a situation like that, I'd be interested to know how you motivate that person to get.
Well, what I do is I tell them just as I told you. If I'm more interested in you than you are in yourself, that's a problem. And if they don't get it together, they no longer can be in the program. Because what we cannot do is put so much energy into someone that don't want that energy put into themselves. And you can't really, because there's so many more people out there that really need the help. And people have to want the help.
That's
you can't force it. You can't force feed anyone to get their lives together. That has to be a conscientious decision of their own. We can beat them black and blue. That's not going to make them change it. Until they want to do it, they're not going to do it.
All right. Well, now tell me about some of your success stories that you are so just many. Absolutely excited about. That brings tears to your eyes when you think about
God.
It.
I have a young lady. Oh, my God. She's in Atlanta now. And she is, oh, my God, she's doing so great. She started her. I always tell them, you know, it's good to have a job, but I always want y'all to think about careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about careers. I say God placed something in each and every one of us. Each and every one of us have a passion. And once you find what, tap into what he has given you, I promise you, you'll be happy doing it. And you can't do anything but succeed. And this young lady, she tells me all the time to this day, she calls or texts like every once a week, and she says, I'm still praying every day like you asked me to. I found my passion. She started her own traveling company. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she sells hair,
mm-hmm.
and eyelashes, and she has just taken off. And she'll say, when she's at her different events, of vendor events, she said, the only thing that's missing is you. I say, I'm there in spirit.
Spirit. My goodness.
Yes.
Now, how old was she when she came to you?
She was 23. Okay. No, 22.
She's
23 now.
23 now. And she did she have kids?
Yes. She had one little girl. Oh, that was my baby.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, so she was really young. And
really?
Yeah. That is a success story because, when a young person like that turns their lives around, and it sounds like to me that you bond yourself with them. And so it's, they almost are substitutes for your children.
Right.
It's,
right.
And that's a great passion.
Right.
Because, you know, nobody can give you that kind of passion.
Nobody.
You know, that's something that only God gives.
Right.
And, I wanted you to tell me, if someone wanted to donate to your organization and support what you're trying to do, how would they do that now?
They can go to graciouShandsHousing.org,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
and on there, there's a donate button if they would like to donate. If they want to get in contact, there's a number for a director. There's mm-hmm. a number for the president. Mm-hmm. They'll see all that on the website. Or they can just personally call me at 704-962-6147.
Okay. And in our closing statements, is there any other remarks you'd like to make?
No, I just thank you for having me. I thank the listeners for listening. If there's anyone that is looking, I'm looking for board members with fresh ideas, okay, because I just believe that God is taking Gracious Hands to higher heights. My prayer is that we open up 10 within the next year, because they're much needed. So if this is something that, if this is your passion, and I only like to work with those that have the passion, mm-hmm, if this is your passion, please connect with me, because I definitely need you in my corner.
Fantastic. Okay. We've had a great interview with Sonja Chisholm, and she is the founder of Gracious Hands Traditional Housing for Women and Children. As we close today, we'd like to close with a word to someone out there who is in leadership, and seems like leadership gets tougher every day. But remember, leadership is the ability to get extraordinary achievements from ordinary people. So just keep pressing on.
It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. The Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection.